Brian Lehrer on WNYC. Hi there, everybody. First, a big thank you to Heidi Moore, Anna Sale, and Brooke Gladstone for filling in while I was off last week. Great job, all three, from what I've heard. Now on to the big news of the weekend, Mitt Romney's running mate selection and the question it raises, did he pick someone who is too radical for the American mainstream? We have a variety of guests on Paul Ryan today, beginning now with Raihan Salam, a Ryan fan, I think it's safe to say, contributor to the National Review Online's blog, The Agenda, also a columnist at The Daily, Rupert Murdoch's iPad magazine, and co-author of the book Grand New Party, How Republicans Can Win the Working Class and Save the American Dream. Hey, Raihan, glad we have you in the seat to get us going on this.
Thanks for having me, Brian.
First, briefly on the politics before we get to policy. It's ticket balancing in a Romney sort of way, right? He is known for changing his position on everything from abortion to the individual mandate, depending on what he's running for. Paul Ryan is known for having a libertarian economic vision and sticking to it. Yes?
Well, Paul is certainly considered reliably conservative, and he's also a Catholic from the upper Midwest. And when you think about those Midwest swing states and that Wisconsin nice personality, that's something that actually might resonate and might help the Romney ticket more broadly.
And I think I understand the gamble Romney decided to take here. He was bumping along in the polls all summer, a few points behind Obama, especially in the swing states. Simply attacking the president's record wasn't enough because his own record was proving vulnerable to attack. Too, and it was kind of a wash. So he had to either wait for the debates in October and hope he blows the president away, or gamble on Ryan as a running mate who would change the whole campaign into this is what we're for, not just what we're against. Is that how you see it?
There are a lot of different theories, and that's certainly one of them. My own view is that this was more of a governing pick rather than a campaigning pick. That is, having Ryan in a Romney administration would be incredibly useful to Romney in terms of achieving his goals. And some conservatives are already saying, well, wait a second, this would mean that Paul Ryan would have to carry water for a Romney administration if it pivots to the center, if it does a lot of things that alienate a lot of those conservatives who consider Ryan one of their leaders and a real conservative visionary. So I think that it makes a lot of sense from that perspective as well.
So let's talk about governing, the Romney-Ryan plan as it's beginning to emerge. And they do have, you can see this on the Romney for President campaign site. There's a little Q&A section that says, how is your Medicare plan different from the Ryan plan? And he basically adopts the latest version of the Ryan plan. And he says it would end, my summary, it would end Medicare as we know it and transform it to a system where future seniors go into the marketplace and buy individual health insurance policies like younger uninsured individuals do with premium support from the government. They call it premium support or subsidies, depending on their income. So if I'm a 75-year-old with a heart condition, is that the America I want to live in?
Well, here's the thing, Brian. Part of the plan is that anyone who's 55 years old or older is completely unaffected by these changes, which I actually think is a shame. The other thing I'll throw out there is that, you say that it's ending Medicare as we know it. The thing is that's actually not true. In the most recent iteration of the Ryan or the Ryan-Wyden plan, which also Romney has embraced, the thing is that traditional Medicare is still there as an option. The only issue is that the amount of money that is linked to you, the beneficiary, is tied to the second lowest bid for delivering that benefit. That is, the benefit stays the same. The same services you get, you pay exactly what you pay for it right now. The issue is that if someone can deliver that benefit cheaper, then you receive the support that's pegged to that cheaper bid. And so if traditional Medicare is way more expensive than that second cheapest bid, then you've got to pay extra for it. If a private plan is way more expensive than traditional Medicare, then you'd have to pay extra for that private plan. So that's the way it really works.
Listeners, I know you want to talk about the Paul Ryan pick. Call us up, 212-433. WNYC 433-9692, pro, con, mixed, curious, whatever, 212-433-9692, and get the conversation going on our webpage. We're going to have two segments in a row on this, so we have a lot of white space, let's say, on our website for you to post your thoughts and talk to each other there about Paul Ryan. We'll be talking to both Republicans running for the U.S. Senate nomination in Connecticut later today, Christopher Shays and Linda McMahon. That primary is tomorrow. And we'll see what they think. If Paul Ryan is generally looked at as too radical for the Northeast, are they going to attach themselves to him in their race if they win? So we'll talk to them later. But get the conversation going, WNYC.org. Click on Brian Lehr Show to do it on the web, 212-433-WNYC to do it on the air. Now, there have been a few different generations already of Ryan's Medicare reform proposal. Reacting to the previous version, the 2011 or 2010 one, the Congressional Budget Office wrote this. The value of the voucher would be less than expected. The value of the voucher would be less than expected Medicare spending per enrollee in 2021 when the voucher program would begin. In addition, Medicare's current payment rates for providers are lower than those paid by commercial insurers and the program's purchased insurance. Beneficiaries would therefore face higher premiums in the private market for a package of benefits similar to that currently provided by Medicare. Do you accept that?
I accept that as a characterization of the earlier plan. And here's the funny thing about people characterizing Paul Ryan as an extremist. What happened when he saw those evaluations of the plan is he listened to a lot of folks, including Democrats like Alice Rivlin, President Clinton's budget director, and then he changed his plan so that it was essentially identical to the plan that Alice Rivlin and former Republican Senator Pete Domenici have been championing at the Bipartisan Policy Center. So I think that, what you've seen is that he said, wow, that really is not what I wanted for the system, and I recognize a lot of the concern and anxiety about that. So let's go to a system that preserves a Medicare public option and that also is more generous in its structure so that it can meet some of those concerns about the future.
Although at that time, at least, that led President Obama to say this.
Disguised as deficit reduction plans, it is really an attempt to impose a radical vision on our country. It is thinly veiled social Darwinism. It is antithetical to our entire history as a land of opportunity and upward mobility for everybody who's willing to work for it.
And actually, I guess that was a broader comment, not just about the Medicare reform, but the whole Ryan budget, correct?
Yes, that's right. And I think that when you look at the Medicare component of it in particular, Ryan does have a growth rate that he plans to keep Medicare to over the long term. And that growth rate is exactly the same as the growth that President Obama proposes in his most recent budget proposal. It's GDP plus 0.5% a year. So I think that in that regard, there's a close parallel. There are, however, other aspects of the Ryan proposal, for example, with regard to Medicaid and with regard to discretionary spending, which I think, one can be far more critical of. But the thing is that the Medicare piece that everyone is talking about, I would say because elderly voters vote, is actually the part of it that's the best part of the plan, and I think very substantively moderate.
And I want to get to those other parts, but one more thing from the CBO on that 2011 version of the Ryan Medicare plan. CBO wrote, Congressional Budget Office, the bipartisan or nonpartisan group in Congress wrote, the value of the voucher would grow significantly more slowly than CBO expects that Medicare spending per enrollee would grow under current law. Beneficiaries would therefore be likely to purchase less comprehensive health plans or plans more heavily managed than traditional Medicare, resulting in some combination of less use of healthcare services and less use of technologically advanced treatments than under current law. Beneficiaries would also bear the financial risk for the cost of buying insurance policies or the cost of obtaining healthcare services beyond what would be covered by their insurance. So it sounds like less healthcare overall, and the risk gets moved on to the individual rather than under the Obama plan. The risk is in less reimbursements to doctors.
Well, yeah, that's why we moved to a defined benefit rather than a defined contribution system. It just happens to be on a budget. David Cutler, who is one of the architects of President Obama's coverage expansion of his health reform ideas, has actually studied what the Ryan-Wyden plan would have done in 2009. And what he found is that you know, quite consistently, some of these private plans, you know, if they had been, if this system had been implemented then, it would have saved 9% of the Medicare budget. That's looking at, again, this new Ryan Wyden proposal rather than the old proposal. And again, David Cutler is a backer of the president. He is someone who is not a fan of the Ryan plan, but, you know, he's done the analysis and he's found that it would save a substantial amount of money while delivering the same Medicare benefit.
Which the CBO seems to doubt in that statement about the same benefit.
That's the CBO talking about the 2011 plan,
yes,
which I was critical of. A lot of other folks were critical of. And again, that's why Paul Ryan changed the plan very substantially. It's a big difference to say at one point you eliminate the Medicare public option and another case to say we're going to have it, we're going to strengthen it. Mm. Those are two very different plans.
Let's go to our phones. My guest, Raihan Salam, contributed to The Daily and National Review Online. And Ed in the Bronx, you're on the air. Hi, Ed.
Hello. I want to ask about why they're waiting until it's people that are 55. And I also want to understand something. If you're going to set up a pool for all the healthy seniors, isn't that going to make the sick seniors drive Medicare into incredible debt? And then we'll end up with Republicans pounding their fist on the table saying now we need to privatize the whole thing so the nation won't go broke.
Ryan?
I think that's a great question. Well, there are two separate questions there. And with regard to the latter question, what you're talking about is this danger of adverse selection. What happens if all the healthy folks go to one set of plans and all the sick folks go to another set of plans? And fortunately, there are backstops to deal with that where you would actually try to guarantee that plans are not able to engage in that kind of cream skimming, partly because you're not allowing the insurers in order to engage in those practices that would enable adverse selection to take place. And we allow that, for example, we have a federal employee health benefits plan that does various things in order to address those concerns about adverse selection that would be used in this system as well. So I think that your concern about what would happen to the system over time, the real anxiety is this. If this system doesn't work, then we're going to move to a more statist system rather than the other way around, because that would discredit these reforms. So these guys have a big stake in these reforms working, which is one reason why Ryan moved in, you could say, a leftward direction between the 2011 and 2012 versions of the plan.
And thank you. Bob in Brooklyn, you're on WNYC. Hi, Bob.
Hello.
Go ahead.
Oh, good morning. Thank you. Yeah, Congressman Paul Ryan, as the chairman of the Budget Committee, he's on record as saying he wants to broaden the tax base. That is, he means increase taxes on low-income people. Now, listen, people in the 10% tax bracket do pay a lot of federal income tax. The Republicans are trying to say lower-income people pay no federal taxes. But the way all of the Republicans, including Senator John Kyle, Lindsey Graham, they want to increase taxes on low-income people and moderate-income people is by eliminating deductions. Now, they say use the term loopholes, but when they talk about a flat tax eliminating all deductions, people would lose deductions on things like out-of-pocket medical expenses, dental expenses, premiums on health insurance, local property taxes, state income taxes, state sales taxes. This is going to be an enormous tax increase on the people who can least afford it.
Bob, thank you very much. And now we move through his question from the Medicare reform per se to the larger Ryan budget.
Well, you know, Bob raises a lot of really interesting points, and I've got to take exception to some of them. So when people talk about broadening the tax base, they're generally talking about, as he suggested, getting rid of a lot of those deductions he described. Now, the issue is who actually benefits from those deductions? And I would argue that when you look at our deductions for health insurance, when you look at them for mortgage interest, et cetera, these things overwhelmingly benefit more affluent people, upper middle income households and more affluent households, rather than low income folks. Because again, the higher your tax bracket, the more valuable a deduction is to you. Now, the thing about the Ryan plan, the most recent iteration of it, is that he says, well, here's my broad vision, and Dave Camp of the Ways and Means Committee, they're going to figure out what the tax piece is going to look like. So he really put that to the side. But I understand why there's a lot of anxiety about this, because a lot of people do depend on those deductions. But the thing is that you're not going to be able to raise revenue in a way that's going to be healthy and conducive for economic growth without addressing the fact that if you live in New York City and you rent an apartment, you take a big hit relative to someone who buys a house with mortgage debt. And this is a society that I would argue has bet really big on mortgage debt in a way that makes these kinds of distortions in the tax code very, very unhealthy.
You're hearing Ryan the way he would like to be heard. Here's something along those lines that he said on 60 Minutes last night.
What we're saying is take away the tax shelters that are uniquely enjoyed by people in the top tax brackets so they can't shelter as much money from taxation so they can lower tax rates for everybody to make America more competitive.
So that's Ryan in his own words last night. But on his tax cut and deficit plan, at least as it came out in 2010, Paul Krugman wrote at the time that Ryan is a flim-flam man, Paul Krugman's insult, for talking like a deficit hawk but not actually being one. Quote, the Nonpartisan Tax Policy Center's numbers indicate that the Ryan plan would reduce revenue by almost $4 trillion over the next decade. That's the tax cuts. If you add these revenue losses to the numbers the Post cites, you get a much larger deficit in 2020, roughly $1.3 trillion. And that's about the same as the Budget Office's estimate of the 2020 deficit under the Obama administration's plans. That is, Mr. Ryan may speak about the deficit in apocalyptic terms, but even if you believe that his proposed spending cuts are feasible, which you shouldn't, says Krugman, the roadmap wouldn't reduce the deficit. All it would do is cut benefits for the middle class while slashing taxes on the rich. Wrong?
Well, yeah, it is wrong. And there are a couple of ways to think about this. So basically, Ryan's view is that we should keep the tax share of GDP to about 18-19% of the economy. That's roughly the average it's been in recent decades. There is another view that we should go well above where we've been in recent decades, which is a legitimate and defensible view. But he's not talking about some kind of radical change of course. Rather, he's saying, let's keep the tax take roughly to where it's been in recent years. And the truth is that if you do that, it becomes really hard to keep the spending trajectory of the big health entitlements where they are right now. So that's the real debate. We could raise taxes if you want to keep the spending trajectory where it is right now, but you're going to have to raise taxes by a lot, and you're not just going to be able to raise taxes on the very rich. And that's why what Ryan is trying to explain is that we're dealing with some very hard choices. And I think that Ryan would actually be open to some tax increases. In fact, he endorsed a Toomey plan that would have represented tax increases relative to the Bush tax cuts. But I think that, it's going to be a negotiation because, again, some people are going to want to fix things on the spending side, and some people are going to prefer, doing more on the tax side.
And the Congressional Budget Office, as cited by the Times front page on Sunday, said the Ryan budget would keep running deficits for 30 years.
That is absolutely right. And a really important point, Brian, because there are a lot of folks in Congress, a lot of Republicans in Congress, who want to balance the budget much, much faster. But the thing is, that's a really tough thing to do for two reasons. One is that we've had a huge economic disaster. You might be aware of that.
And the other piece
of that is that starting in 2021, the number of baby boomers who are retiring goes up dramatically. If that weren't the case, then balancing the budget would be a much easier feat to pull off. But the thing is that Ryan is trying to preserve the Medicare benefit. He is trying to, and he actually doesn't touch Social Security, which has driven a lot of conservatives crazy. So if you want to do that, then it's really hard to get to balance until after all of the baby boomers have gone through the system.
But then somebody like Krugman would argue that, as evidenced by those numbers, he's not so concerned about no deficits as much as he is about shrinking government as an Ayn Randian philosophy is of individualism. Or as Krugman put it in that column in 2010, the Tax Policy Center finds that the Ryan plan would cut taxes on the richest 1% of the population in half, giving them 117% of the plan's total tax cuts. Even as it slashed taxes at the top, the plan would raise taxes for 95% of the population. And we're already hearing that line of attack from the Democrats.
Well, the unfortunate truth, Brian, is that Paul Ryan hasn't provided a sufficiently detailed tax proposal that we could really analyze, which is why I don't think we're ever going to have a tax reform that's going to look much like what he's outlined, for better or for worse. And I think that when you're looking at that line of attack, that this guy's a Randian crazy person, I'm not sure how familiar your listeners are with Ayn Rand, but Ayn Rand did not spend months and months talking about how we want to save the safety net, which is exactly what Paul Ryan says. Take it or leave it. You can believe him or not believe
Democrats him. Democrats don't believe him when he says.
But what Paul Ryan always says is that, look, if we go on the current trajectory, we're going to see what happened in Ireland and a variety of other Western European countries where the safety net is slashed because we simply run out of the fiscal capacity to pay for it. If we change those things now while we still have a little bit of time, then we can preserve a safety net that can help people maintain their standards of living in old age.
If he's sincere. Last thing before we change guests. He was on the Simpson-Bowles Commission and voted against their centrist deficit reduction. Does that mean he's pure Tea Party in this respect?
Well, again, if you look at a lot of the Tea Party folks, they certainly wouldn't want to wait 30 years to balance the budget. They'd much rather go a lot faster than that. The real reason he voted against it is because he didn't feel as though Simpson-Bowles did enough to address the growth of health entitlements. And so that's why he found it unserious, and that's why it didn't go forward. I think that there were, in fact, a lot of very valuable pieces. And in fact, his Medicare plan draws heavily on some of those ideas from Simpson-Bowles. So I think that you could sort of bat around whether or not his judgment was right on that. But it really was because he thought they didn't do enough to address what he sees as a long-term spending problem.
Raihan Salam, columnist at The Daily, blogger for the National Review's National Review Online's The Agenda, co-author of Grand New Party, How Republicans Can Win the Working Class and Save the American Dream. Thank you so much for being our first guest talking about Paul Ryan.
Thanks very much, Brian.
Our second guest in just a minute will be Ryan Lizza, who wrote a long Ryan profile in The New Yorker this month. Stay with us.
America is more than just a place, though. America is an idea. It's the only country founded on an idea. Our rights come from nature and God, not from government.
The line that got the biggest applause when Paul Ryan was introduced by Mitt Romney as his running mate at a Norfolk, Virginia event on Saturday. Now, the New Yorker's Washington correspondent, Ryan Lizza, had a long profile of Paul Ryan in the August 6th edition. And, Ryan, one could say you were prescient, except that at the end of the piece, you call Ryan a long shot to be Romney's running mate, and you say he seems better suited to keep doing what he had been doing in Congress. So, were you surprised by this pick?
Yeah, I was surprised, actually. Interviewing him a couple of times and spending time in his hometown and understanding the budgets he's written since 2008, I was pretty surprised that Romney would want to define what is basically a fairly undefined policy agenda this campaign with Paul Ryan, basically filling in all the blank spaces in his policy background with this young congressman who has really sort of led the Republican Party in the last few years to embrace a series of ideas that are fairly untested, both politically and from just in terms of whether they'll work or not.
Listeners, keep calling us to talk about Paul Ryan, 212-433-WNYC, and definitely keep posting where the conversation is lively at WNYC.org. Click on Brian Lehrer Show for our comments page. And we have a Ryan thing going on, right? So we're talking about Paul Ryan, and we're talking to Ryan Lizza.
Or even more confusing, his daughter's name is Liza Ryan.
Oh, so she is you. Only reversed and with one Z missing.
Exactly.
Let's do some biography. You describe Ryan as coming from a large and powerful family in his hometown of Janesville, Wisconsin, near the Illinois border. Can you describe Janesville and the place of the Ryans in it?
Yeah, so Janesville is close to Madison, southeast Wisconsin, in between Madison and Chicago, but closer to Madison. It's a small town, about 60,000 people now, but less than that when he was growing up. He's fifth generation there. So when I first visited, someone said to me, it was a big deal growing up as a Ryan in Janesville. The Ryans have been there a long time, and the Ryan Inc., this by now national and very large construction firm, was started by his family. And, when he first ran for Congress in 1998, one of the people that recommended him said, you've got all those trucks. Your family has all those trucks with the Ryan name driving all over this district. That's a good name to have when you run. So he had a little bit of a leg up. And, you know, he grew up in the sort of fancy part of town, the Courthouse Hill district, a lot of historic old homes. So he was it wasn't quite a privileged upbringing, but he came from a family that was very important in a very small town.
You even quote the term Irish Mafia. How was that used in the context of Janesville and the Ryans?
Yeah, so there are these three old Irish families that all were entrepreneurial and had major businesses that really kind of built Janesville in the post-World War II era. And they were all, the three families were close, intermarried, were in various businesses together, and they had the nickname the Irish Mafia. I think Ryan joked to me that at a certain point, the Irish immigrants, the mid-19th century potato famine Irish immigrants that his family was a part of, began to displace the old line WASPs in Janesville. And he sort of joked that the Irish immigrants moved from the bad section of towns up to the Courthouse Hill section of town eventually, where he was born. So that's the sort of the long history of Janesville.
Now, later this week, we'll be launching a series on the show called That's My Issue, about experiences in people's own lives and how they have shaped their politics. And you describe a real That's My Issue moment for Paul Ryan when his father died suddenly when Ryan was still in high school, and how that threw him into the politics of Ayn Rand. Can you talk about that series of events?
Yeah, so he was 16 years old, high school student. He was working at McDonald's. He came home from a long night working the grill, and he slept in that day, and he got a frantic phone call from his father's secretary. Now, his grandfather and his father both defected from the family business, and they were lawyers. So his father had a small law firm downtown Janesville, and the secretary was calling and saying, "Hey, your dad's got clients in the office here. Where is he?" And so Paul Ryan got up. He was the only other person at home. He walked into his parents' bedroom, and he saw his father there in the bed. He thought he was sleeping. He went to wake him up, and he was dead. He had died of a heart attack. So his father, his grandfather, and his great-grandfather all died before they were 60, which has done a couple of things for Paul Ryan. One, it's made him a health nut. He talks about this quite frequently. But two, I think it's given him a sort of sense that he's got to hurry up and get things done in life because you never know how much time you have. And he essentially told me that. And so he went through a phase after his father died of, you know, sort of...
It also means maybe he's the wrong person to be making all these changes about health care for the really old.
That's right. He's in amazing shape, though. He's a health freak. But he went through this period of self-discovery where he got into political philosophy. He got into Ayn Rand, Atlas Shrugged. He said many times sort of changed his life, and that pushed him into reading economic philosophers. He got into Friedrich Hayek.
But what's the connection? I mean, a kid loses his father at a young age and decides from that individualism rather than community is the key to survival. Yeah. Do you understand it?
I didn't want to stretch the analogy because I don't think it's always dangerous as a journalist when you try and psychoanalyze these guys, but I don't think it's too far a leap to see someone at that age losing his father, having to partly take care of his family, and someone giving you Atlas Shrugged and learning about the importance of individualism. I think you can see some connection there, but there's no doubt that there's a straight line from that time in his life and that discovery of libertarian economic philosophers and Ayn Rand, that goes straight through to his time in public office and the policies he's championed ever since. You know, I think a lot of people, I mean, myself included, I read all kinds of wacky stuff in college, but either outgrow it or got interested in other things. But what Paul Ryan discovered in high school and college, he has drawn on ever since.
Indeed. And here is Ryan on his Ayn Rand roots, speaking to the Randian Atlas Society in 2005.
The reason I got involved in public service, by and large, if I had to credit one thinker, one person, it would be Ayn Rand. And the fight we are in here, make no mistake about it, is a fight of individualism versus collectivism. In almost every fight we are involved in here on Capitol Hill, whether it's an amendment vote that I'll take later on this afternoon or a big piece of policy we're putting through our Ways and Means Committee, it is a fight that usually comes down to one conflict, individualism versus collectivism.
individualism versus collectivism. Is that what a vice president or a president, Ryan, would be fighting?
Well, I think what's important when you think about Ryan, and a lot of people have now made this point, and it's a criticism, that it might not be right to see his passion and the driving force in his ideology being deficit reduction, being really caring about the debt.
Right. I mean, that isn't how to save Medicare. That's an ideological struggle.
That's right. That's right. And look, if you look at his voting record during the Bush years, he certainly wasn't concerned about the deficits and the long-term debt. As he said in the first version of his budget, he believes that you can't truly be free unless you are taking care of yourself to the maximum extent possible. And if you believe that, then you believe that if you're getting free health care from the government when you're 65 years old, that you're not fully responsible for yourself. So I think it's important to understand that that's where he's coming from, and just sort of clear away some of the political, more political reasons that sometimes, Ryan, but lots of politicians put forward for their plans. And I think, as you pointed out in your interview with Rehan, if he really, really cared about the deficit crisis, he would be much more open to raising revenue and getting the budget balanced a lot sooner than under his plan.
Although Rehan countered that if he was a true, pure Randian, then he wouldn't be learning from the concerns that people have expressed about the previous version of his budget and his Medicare plan because they were seen as too harsh, and then going on to soften them. He wouldn't be taking 30 years to get to zero deficits. The true Randian, if that's really what he was, would be slashing and burning a lot more than that.
Yeah, I mean, look, he's not Ron Paul, right? He's modified his budget as the Republicans took over the majority, and he attempted to cobble together a majority of the Republican caucus to vote for it. And the first thing he did is he dropped the Social Security privatization portion. He also dropped an element on getting rid of the tax exclusion for health care benefits. He got rid of that. He took out some, politically tough parts. And in the most recent version, he decided to keep traditional Medicare in as an option. That was the 2012 version.
Public
so
option.
Those are three pretty significant things he did to make it more politically palatable. The pressure on him to do that was coming from Republicans who were worried about running in 2012 on the more right-wing version of his budget. As he told me, his original version was Paul Ryan unplugged. That was the word he used with me, unplugged. But once he had to build a majority, he modified it a little bit.
Ryan Lizza, Washington correspondent for The New Yorker, on Paul Ryan, Mitt Romney's newly minted running mate, and Biba in Jersey City. You're on WNYC. Thank you for calling in.
Hello, Brian. Nice to be back. It's been a while since I've called in.
I'm glad you're calling again.
Yeah, and Brian, this is very interesting about Romney selecting Paul Ryan. I was cheering for Rubio, but who knows? But what is interesting about Paul Ryan is, you've been talking about Ayn Rand, and I've been reading about how he, advocated his staff that they all must read Ayn Rand's Atlas Shrugged, and that is interesting. And then there was an article in the Wall Street Journal about Ayn Rand, and she was a confirmed atheist, pro-choice, and a true libertarian. So I'm wondering, where does he stand, Paul Ryan?
Well, it's a really, really good question. Because in recent years, as Paul Ryan's profile has risen, and as people have brought up, especially the quote that Brian, that you played there, where he talks about Ayn Rand being the most influential person in terms of getting him into public life, he has started to realize that this is a political problem, that you don't necessarily want to be defined by Ayn Rand, who had all kinds of controversial views. And he started to distance himself from her and to backtrack a little bit from what he said in that clip that you played, Brian. And especially on some of her views on religion. Ayn Rand was an atheist, and Paul Ryan told me when I asked him about Ayn Rand, he was very quick to point out that he does not subscribe to her atheism. In recent years, he's tried to point a little bit more to his Catholicism as influencing him.
But there's an issue there, too. Yes, Ryan is an observant Catholic, but the American bishops have denounced the Ryan budget as not meeting their moral standards for meeting the needs of the poor.
Yeah, it's really a lesson in what happens when you become a politician at his level. But he tried to move away from Ayn Rand defining him, embraced Catholic thinking as defining him, and a lot of Catholic bishops attacked him and the budget, and there were a series of nuns that actually got on a bus and followed him around America to protest the budget.
Wow. Well, there we have our first couple of conversations about Paul Ryan, the newly minted vice presidential running mate of Mitt Romney. This certainly does change the discussion.
It does. I think that's what's good. You know, we'll have a good, hopefully, we'll have a good debate about two very distinct philosophies of where to take the country, and that, you know, Romney and Obama are not running away from the core beliefs of their respective parties now. So it's good to have a choice like this for voters.
Ryan Lizza will no doubt continue writing about Paul Ryan on the pages of The New Yorker, where he is Washington correspondent. Ryan, thank you so much.
Hey, my pleasure. Thank you, Brian.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. Coming up next, as for a certain New Jersey governor who did not get picked as Romney's running mate, there are some mysterious ads running on his behalf, and we'll talk about them next. And by the way, we'll get takes on Paul Ryan and whether two certain people want to be associated with him. Coming up later in the show, they are the two Republicans vying for Joe Lieberman's Senate seat in Connecticut. Stay with us.